And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
How long we've been waiting on you. You shouldn't have even gone to bingo. Damn nut. Kiss my ass.
Good morning, Swirl, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Friday, April 15th, and this is The Drop. Happy Passover. Happy Easter weekend. Aster weekend, I was about to say.
Some,
happy
probably.
NBA playoffs. Happy Aster weekend.
Kiss my Aster.
I think that's exactly why I said that. I'm J.E. Skeens. Alongside me, thanks to the power of technology. Yeah, we're back in the yard. It's Stas Mellis.
How's it going, everybody?
Hey, Tassie. We got our top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
Hey. Hey. Yo. International man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis. And finally, making the magic happen. He was jealous of Andrew Schlecht playing in the yard. It's super producer, JD.
So jealous. Yeah. God. It's so easy, guys.
Don't worry, guys.
I'll take myself out, and I'll see you in an hour and a half.
Yeah. Go do your doctor's appointment now.
I should. I really should.
We'll be back, hopefully, in the Classic Factory on Monday. Shout out to the stream team, though, for joining us live right now on YouTube. Subscribe, like, comment, share the show. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Check out yesterday's new No Buffs episode, our Survivor podcast. Topics included feasting on Applebee's, Roxroy's Exile Island Vacation, the return of the Shillelagh of Time, and Lee, you'll like this. How you would do on Survivor. That was a question that somebody sent in. Yes. I guess the question was, who would suffer more on Survivor, Lee because he couldn't have breakfast, or Skeets because he couldn't shower? So that was the debate, and then we really started talking about how you would do. We also learned, you might like this, Tass, Lee, everybody joining us here on No Dunks, Jonathan, one of the guys on Survivor, giant dude, right? His normal breakfast, Lee, 18 eggs, 9 pieces of cheese, and grits.
I'm not surprised he's a big gentleman then.
Yes.
He's consuming that amount of calories. It doesn't really jive with someone who's a thin person, I would say. So
he's a big boy.
If that's what he likes for breakfast, then good on him.
We also got this great tweet I just saw, JD. You'll like this. Jeremy says, listening to No Buffs, I love my No Dunks boys covering basketball, but I find myself always either agreeing with Jason Doyle or being compelled by what he has to say about Survivor. He is the MVP of No Buffs. Wow. This two-hour episode was the best of the season so far, so he was agreeing with you there.
Well, to be fair to you guys, I put my entire week into that show. You guys just show up, you watch the show right beforehand, and then you just come on and wing it. I deep dive, I think about it. I'm in the shower. I'm thinking about what am I going to say on next week's No Buffs, and so that's just more work, really. That's it.
Well, you can tell because you're killing it. The people are loving JD's No Buffs Survivor thoughts. So anyway, go check that out. On today's Drop podcast, we're going to get you all set for tonight's final two play-in games. We're going to take a big picture look at the NBA playoffs that start this weekend. We'll discuss which series we're most excited for and why, which role players to maybe keep an eye on this weekend. So that'll be a lot of fun. We got Tweet of the Night. We got Rapid Fire. But let's start with a deep dive on the 2-7 matchups in both conferences, because we've done our previews and predictions for the 3-6 matchups, for the 4-5 matchups. So if you want to know what we had to say about those, go check out the podcast from earlier this week. But let's start in the West. Grizzlies-Wolves. Lele, four-game regular season series between these teams, tied 2-2. D'Angelo Russell balled out in the series. John Morant averaged about 20. all but one game decided by 8 points or fewer. So a lot of close games. What's the key to this series for you, Grizz Wolves?
Well, I love this matchup. I think it is going to be a fascinating series because the Grizzlies did everything right during the regular season. You know, won a ton of games. They proved they could win without their all-star and Ja Morant for more than 20 games. And I think what's really key here is they led the league in important defensive categories, which can have an impact come playoff times, like rebound, steals, and blocks. They were relentless on the defensive end. And then on the offensive end, they were pretty good too, leading the league in fast break points, second chance points, and points in the paint. And the last one I think is significant because the Grizzlies' weakness is three-point shooting. They make them at an okay rate. They just don't make as many as other teams, like the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, believe it or not, took more and made more threes than any other team this season. I was a little surprised to see that this morning when I was going through the stats. They don't shoot them at necessarily the best rate, but still, they're knocking them down. They made about 300 more in total than the Grizzlies just this season. So I think early on, though, in a game and a series, if you can get inside, get some high percentage looks, what like the Grizzlies like to do. Ja Morant loves to get into the paint. I think that is vital for a team that, look, they made the playoffs last season, but the expectations when you are a number 8 seed as they were last season versus a number 2 seed this season are completely different. Anything that they got out of last season's playoffs was gravy. This season, when you're the number 2 seed, you are expected to win your first round series fairly comfortably most of the time. So I think the Grizzlies are deserving favorites in this series, but it still feels a little to me like they're ahead of schedule. You know, they sort of improved almost too much this season. They were too good, if that's such a thing. And that's why I think if you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, there's no reason to think that they can't go in there and steal this series. I mean, they've already shown incredible resilience in one game. It was just one game, but yeah, they won the play-in game against the team. I can't remember if we all picked the Clippers to win that. I certainly did. They were going up against an experienced team, and they won it without their all-star, Karl Anthony Towns. He was a no-show for, I mean, literally the entire game. He fouled out, and even in the minutes he did play, he just wasn't very good. They've got a very good offense offensive guys in D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, of course, when he does play. And then Anthony Edwards, he already showed he's ready for the big time. And then, of course, defensively, they've got Patrick Beverley, who is going to impact this series, maybe to the detriment of his own team, maybe to the benefit of his own team. But you know that Patrick Beverley's already got his eyes on the Ja Morant matchup. He wants that battle. He wants to see what he can do to slow him down. So I think there's so many different things in this series that can impact it. Again, I think that the Grizzlies love to get out and run, get into the transition and score a lot of baskets because they're not going to bomb away from three, and the Memphis Grizzlies probably are. So it's going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be close. I'm picking the Memphis Grizzlies to win this series, probably in six games. But I do think, as you mentioned there, Skids, through those games, 8 points or under, I think we're going to have a close series because the Grizzlies certainly aren't a proven playoff team right now. Obviously, the Minnesota Timberwolves are not either. But I just feel that the Timberwolves probably look at this matchup and go, you know, obviously they'd rather Memphis over Phoenix. And they'd probably even rather Memphis over Golden State simply because of the experience factor that Golden State has. They may be injured, but I think Memphis hasn't proven anything beyond the regular season right now. So I think it's going to be a fascinating series. I'm really excited for this one.
What do you think, Tass? Just as excited as Lele for this one?
Yeah, I'm pumped. Sure, the Wolves would want to pick the most inexperienced team at the top of the bracket. That makes sense. But the Grizzlies, I think, have a few things going for them when it comes to the Wolves. I was concerned about the Grizzlies' offense and how it would translate to the playoffs because, as Lee said, they like to get it moving. They led the league in fast break points and they led the league in second chance points. Two categories you'd assume would probably be taken care of a little bit more in the postseason when teams get back on defense, teams take care of the glass more. But the Wolves have the fastest pace in the league. They like to play the fastest, and the Grizzlies are second. So I think that bodes well for the Grizzlies. If it gets into a track meet at home with the Grizzlies' home court advantage, that bodes really, really well because, yeah, the Grizzlies fourth in offense overall, but only 22nd in half-court offense when things slow down, when it's strictly the Jaw show and he has to take over. And I think he can do that because I don't think it's going to be a great defensive showing from the Wolves where they get back and stop this team. Jaw led the league in points in the paint this season of any player, which is a dumb stat. Just think about that. Ja Morant had more points in the paint per game than Jokic or Embiid or anybody. It usually was Shaq's stat, then it was Giannis's stat, mm-hmm. and now it's Ja Morant's stat. And I think he'll be able to do that against this Wolves team that likes to play fast. So that bodes well. If it was a better defensive team that got back or that didn't play as fast, I think that would be different for the Wolves. I'm sorry, for the Grizzlies. But the Grizzlies have got to be, to me, the most exciting team going into this weekend as a home court team. I just want to watch their fans. I just want to watch them, embrace a team that, yeah, it's their first foray into the postseason. But I think this is a pretty decent matchup for them. I think they've got some bigs that are, you know, more athletic even than the Wolves bigs. And I think they can get after it with Jaren Jackson Jr. on the boards, with Brandon Clark on the boards. So they love getting offensive rebounds. They love running, but so do the Wolves. So I think this kind of plays right into their hands. I do like Memphis in this series.
Yeah, Memphis, you know, the favorites in this, Trey, of course. I mean, they were one of the best teams in the regular season, with or without Ja Morant. They're all NBA guy. But what needs to go right for the Wolves to like pull off the upset or even stretch this to, potential 7-game, let's say, even? What do you think?
I think the key for the Wolves has to be forcing turnovers, because I'm with Tass. One of the big questions of the playoffs for me is what the Grizzlies offense is going to look like in the half court. And if it's just going to be the Josho and they're just going to have to rely on him getting to the bucket every single time. But if the Wolves are able to force turnovers, that really gooses their offense, because they're not a super strong defensive team, but they get a ton of steals, which then gives them the chance to get out in transition and get a lot of easy buckets. And that then allows them to keep a Jared Vanderbilt on the court or a McDaniels on the court. Those are kind of the strengths of both of those two players, and certainly the offensive strengths running in transition. So I think that's a key area to be watching here, because the Grizzlies actually do a pretty good job at taking care of the ball. They're top five in lowest turnover rate. So, you know, just like Tass is saying, both teams like to run here. Whoever controls the pace is really going to be in charge, because I think the offensive rebounding is going to be an issue for the Timberwolves. Steven Adams, to me, is a little bit of an X factor here, because Karl-Anthony Towns is pretty solid on the offensive glass. He gets a lot of second chance points, but Steven Adams is a great defensive rebounder. So you need Steven Adams on that side of the court. And then the Timberwolves are pretty weak on the defensive glass. So Steven Adams could certainly punish the Timberwolves there as well. I don't know. I don't know exactly what to expect in this series. It feels like it's going to be close, because both teams, you know, they have had minor playoff experience in the past, but this really feels like their first experience where both teams have to have confidence that they can win the series, because I think it should go long with both of these teams being a little bit unsettled here. I think ultimately, though, it comes down to Ja Morant is going to be pretty solid when it comes down to it, and I think that he will get the best of Patrick Beverley over the course of the series. It's Grizzlies in six probably to me, but I can see the Timberwolves being a lot better, because Towns has had a lot of success against the Grizzlies this season, and you know, after the way the play-in tournament went for him, you have to imagine he's going to bounce back.
Yeah, a lot of people excitedly about the Beverly on Ja Morant matchup, maybe the Dylan Brooks on like an Anthony Edwards type of matchup there, or the CC minutes on Russell, who, again, like I said, had a really good regular season series against the Grizzlies. He scored a ton, and we saw what he just did in the play-in game. Trey went with Steven Adams. Is there another player in this series from either side that you see as like, wow, that guy could, you know, not a star guy, but an X factor here, a role player that could swing this?
Well, Desmond Bane is their pretty good three-point shooter, and he's had a fantastic season. I mean, he's in contention for most improved, but Jar's going to win it, his own teammate there. Jaren Jackson's in contention.
Is Ja Morant going to win it?
But that's the thing. I mean, you expect so much attention is going to go on Ja Morant, and that ball is going to move around. Desmond Bane, he's been shooting the three-pointer really, really well, over 40% this season. So I think he's going to get a ton of shots. And again, the Grizzlies have shown that even if Ja, let's say, gets in foul trouble or whatever and he's off the court, they don't really miss a beat. They know how to play without him. So I think that's a really strong thing here for the Memphis Grizzlies, as they're not so heavily reliant on Ja being out there all the time. They can cope in some minutes when he's not on the court, or if he's just being pestered to death by Patrick Beverley out there. Also excited to see how Jaren Jackson Jr. stands up, because he's been fantastic for them on the defensive end, and his offensive game has improved as well. The numbers haven't improved all that much, but his impact has. So this is really interesting to me. As I said earlier, like, the Grizzlies last season were eighth. Remember, they won game one against the Jazz, and it was like, oh, this is great experience. Well, let's see if that experience is already going to have a factor this season, because you know, they are the number two seed. So they should be the favorite. They've got home court, no health concerns. Dylan Brooks is back. It's going to be great to see how they handle now the pressure of expectation.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating too, Tass, with like the play-in tournament being fairly new here, like what, this is our third season of this, you know, sort of format, let's call it that. I know it's changed a little bit, tweaked a little bit, but will there be the like, you know, the rust factor here where the Grizzlies have had a long time off and the Wolves just played not too long ago. They only had a game here in between. They had the already high stakes, the game seven like feel. Can they carry that into game one? Will it matter at all? Because we just don't really have like a long history of this play-in tournament to know if these teams that sort of sneak their way in the play-in, like the Grizzlies last year, like Lee said, can steal that game one because they're just like a little bit more in the flow where that other team can be, you know, yeah, you get healthy. That's a positive. You get rested. That's a positive. But for that game one, can you turn it up and get right into that playoff sort of vibe right away? We'll see. I don't know if you have a thought on that. Maybe could the Wolves steal game one? I guess what I'm getting at.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be a factor. I guess the Grizzlies had 5 days off or whatever. But I think the good thing about Ja Morant is that he's not a guy who's going to try and take over in the first quarter. He's going to get everybody involved and everyone's going to get in their flow. And that's why they were such a successful team when he was out. So it is a real team. It's not just a superstar and everybody else. So I think, you know, that'll shake off the rust pretty quickly, number one. Number two, I like the fact that, yeah, the Wolves, if they looked at the top of the bracket and they see, yeah, the Suns or the Warriors, even the Jazz, even the Mavs, they would say, we'd rather have the Grizzlies because they lack playoff experience. But at the same time, the Grizzlies should be looking down and say, hey, we were there last year. This Wolves team wasn't. So I think if they look at the bottom of the bracket, I'm sure they're excited to see the Wolves come into their house. So they should feel really, really confident. They have a deeper team than the Minnesota Timberwolves. They've been ridiculously solid. I think, you know, we just expect Ja to go off and to be able to sort of fly by Patrick Beverley. But I think Anthony Edwards, when he locks in, he is such a huge, huge guy, you know, at 6'6 and long. And when he wants to play defense, he's going to do a decent job against Ja Morant. But again, I think it goes back to how Ja is a superstar in this league, how he conducts himself. And that is getting everybody involved. And I think they are going to play like a team like they did all season long. So I think that hurts the Wolves. I think the Grizzlies will get a lot out of their deep, deep roster.
Trey, do you also think Karl-Anthony Towns is going to bounce back from that, you know, abysmal play-in game where he got flustered and got all the fouls and fouled out and did nothing and was rushing shots even when he was finally getting looks after, you know, getting a little space from Batum? Do you think this matchup works better for him here because the Grizzlies probably won't be playing a very, you know, small mobile four on him?
Yeah, I think that Towns is going to certainly have a better series than he did in the play-in game. Against the Grizzlies this season, he was at 23 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, shot 52 from the floor, 38 from three. I think it's just the fact of the matter that the Grizzlies are going to play two traditional big guys. You know, Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. are pretty athletic, but they're still sizable guys, more so than Batum, to the point where the Clippers were going to do whatever they can, double teaming and trapping Towns to make it tough on him. It'll probably be a little bit more straight up with the Grizzlies defense, whether that be Adams, Towns, or Clark. Any of those guys are big guys, so they'll probably be one-on-one with help, that sort of thing, which I think certainly helps out Towns, and it will probably let the Timberwolves space the Grizzlies out a little bit. So I'm expecting him to have a better series, and, you know, it's just one game. That's the other thing, too. Maybe over the course of a 7-game series with the Clippers, Towns figures it out and is able to put up some numbers or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Timberwolves take game one. Did a little quick basketball reference sicko mode here. Obviously, the Grizzlies took game one off the Jazz last year. Apparently, the Trailblazers did the same to the Lakers back in the bubble season as well after they had a nice run in the play-in tournament. So maybe game one is a good chance to steal one just because you've played a game. You know, you've had the high-stakes affair already, especially considering the way the season ended for the Timberwolves. Like, they were kind of locked into seven for a while, so you know, they were playing games that mattered, and then they finally got to one that really, really mattered, showed up in the fourth quarter. So, I don't know. I expect game one to be pretty tight, and it wouldn't be a surprise if the Timberwolves pull it off.
Another X factor for me, too, for the Wolves to pull off the upset, which I think is unlikely because the Grizzlies are that good and they're that deep, and they have Ja Morant, and he should be back to his explosive best. But Malik Beasley, I remember you brought him up, Lee. Didn't have, like, a crazy play-in game, from, you know, really sort of got overshadowed. He didn't do a lot. I mean, it was the D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards show for the Wolves there in that game to get in the seventh seed. But he has, like, been on fire since February, early February. The guy's shooting something like 45% from deep on a lot of attempts from three. So, you know, over a last that's a 30-game sample or something like that. You know he can drop 6, 7, 8 threes in a game. And that would be huge for the Wolves to pull off a couple of these victories. So keep an eye on Beasley. Maybe that'll be one of the guys I'll be watching when we get to role players this weekend. But final predictions here as we wrap up this one. Let's hear from everybody in the stream team as well. Tass, what do you got in this one? Sounds like you're leaning towards Grizzlies. How many games?
I like the Grizz. I think they'll be confident. I think that playoff experience from last year will help them. I think they'll take it in six. I mean, a lot of this, we mentioned a bunch of Wolves. I think a lot of it sort of falls on D'Angelo Russell, too. He had three big games against the Memphis Grizzlies this season, 28, 29, and 36 in those three games. So He's a monster because it's difficult to guard both backcourts on this team with Morant and Bane and then Russell and Edwards. Those are tough covers. And so I think D'Angelo Russell will probably have the ability to get a lot of open shots. So a lot's going to fall on him. But I'm buying the Grizz, and their depth and home court should be a huge factor in this series.
Lee, what are you going?
Yeah, I'm going Grizz in six as well. I think it is going to be a pretty tight series, though, and I sort of like Trey's prediction there. Maybe not the first game, but I think there's a split in the first two anyway. I just think, you know, you're going to see adjustments after game one if the Grizzlies do pull off that victory. And then going back to Minnesota, I think we're going to see the same as well. So I think it is going to be a pretty exciting series. And, you know, I don't think either team is going to truly dominate. I think it's just going to be sort of one in the margins. But Memphis having home court, a bit of a deeper team, and I just think they're better coaches as well there from Taylor Jenks. I think he does a great job. So I'm taking the Grizz in six.
Okay, Trey?
Yeah, I'm Grizzlies in six as well. These seem like kind of similar teams the way they go about playing. They both want to play fast. They both want to force a ton of turnovers, and you're not exactly sure what you're going to be getting in the half court. But the Grizzlies have better depth, and they do have home court advantage. And Ja, despite coming off an injury, it means he's a little bit rested. He'll have to deal with the rust of getting back to playing NBA basketball followed by it being playoff basketball, but I think they can overcome that. So Grizz in six.
Yeah, Grizzlies in six does feel like the safe way to tackle this series, doesn't it? I hate to do it, but that's my official pick too. I'm excited to see type of Karl Anthony Towns we see after the brutal play-in game. And, you know, look, John Moran is probably going to cook Patrick Beverly. You can't really stop him, but you know Beverly's going to give it a go. He's going to, like, get dirty, quote unquote dirty, see what he can get away with. The refs are going to be huge in this series. That's something we talked about when we're doing first thoughts. I mean, the type of game that they're calling, what they're allowing, how many whistles, how many free throws, what, you know, how much barking they're letting them get away with. Or would you be surprised, Lee, if like there's like a game-changing ejection in one of these games because of like a two-tech thing, got an early one because of the classic double tech and then something happens? No, you wouldn't. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun series. And both arenas, I mean, you said it, Tass. Memphis, awesome. We've experienced it. We went there and saw a game. Minnesota were incredible there in their play-in game. And this is like a thirsty fan base that is just going to be going, I think, insane for these first couple of games, games three and four. So the crowd experience in both barns should be awesome. So let's hear from everybody. Who you got?
What do you think, Skeets? Do you celebrate a game three victory the same way you celebrate a play-in victory? Like if the Wolves win their first home playoff game, is that a party?
The party, no. I don't think you're jumping up on the tables. I don't think you're ripping your jerseys off for a game three victory.
It depends. I mean, if they come back from a big deficit and Pat Bev gets the game-sealing play, whether it's a steal or hits a three, he's getting up on the scorer's table for sure. That jersey's coming off. Yeah,
yeah, maybe. Does confetti drop after every playoff win in some of these places?
I think it fell in Atlanta, didn't it, the other day? Something fell, didn't it, from the
I did. Yeah, there was a little bit. I saw Larry Luke's photo. You're right.
Streamers.
We'll see it. Let's hear from everybody. I got Grizzlies in six, as a lot of us do as well. Okay, the other 2-7 matchup in the Eastern Conference. Task, get us started, man. This is the one that's got everybody salivating. Boston, Brooklyn. What do you got?
A fun one, huh? Because so many people want to take the Brooklyn Nets after just watching Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And I'm sure our No Dunks faithful are expecting me to take the Brooklyn Nets because I have been the most vocal person of all of us saying that they'd come out of the play-in tournament and be a team that no one wants to play. But I like Boston against them for just like zoom out and think about the last few months of the Boston Celtics. They play four quarters and the Nets don't. And I think that is going to be a factor in the series. I know it's simple, real simple analysis, but I think this is sort of the worst matchup for the Nets in that regard because the Celtics just don't stop. They were tied for the league lead in net rating, the amount of points they won by despite starting 25 and 25 because the last 3 months have been so damn good for them. They have been so, so solid. Now, I think a concern for the Boston is clutch time. You got Kyrie and you've got Kevin Durant, and the stats say that they were far better in clutch time than the Boston Celtics. Totally true. 6th versus 26th to the Boston Celtics. I get that. And Boston just didn't have to play a lot of those games. They're blowing a lot of teams out. Mm-hmm. But I think the Nets' tiny backcourt is going to be a bit of a problem. You're going to want to hide one of Kyrie Irving or Seth Curry, and they're one of those guys probably going to have to guard Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. You just can't hide both of them against the Celtics. I mean, we saw the other day the Cavs going at the Nets in the play-in tournament, and there was a struggle for Kyrie Irving guarding Caris LeVert possession after possession in the fourth quarter. Now, this is a different animal in Jaylen Brown, even to another degree. You can hide one on Marcus Smart, but Jaylen Brown most likely is going to be guarded by Kyrie or Seth Curry or even Patty Mills. So it's going to be a problem, I think. So that the clutch part kind of evens out there. And listen, the Nets have some continuity problems that will be highlighted against a really good Celtics team that wasn't highlighted in the play-in tournament. They've got holes while the Celtics team just doesn't have any. You know, the Nets are playing Kessler Edwards. He's probably going to have to guard Jason Tatum. He's a rook and just doesn't look all that comfortable at this point so far in the postseason. I mean, they would love to have Ben Simmons out there to guard for 10 minutes. Yeah, Shams Charania is reporting that he could be back between games 4 and game 6. But I as much as I believe Ben Simmons was coming back, I don't know how you can prognosticate that, predict that like so far in advance, think that he's going to come back when he's not doing anything. He's still playing 1-on-0. And Robert Williams, the Boston center that they lost, who helps out. They've got depth behind him in Tyson Horford. But he's even doing more than Ben Simmons is doing. He's further along in his recovery. The wording is always hilarious that Ben Simmons is doing, you know, 1-on-0 work while Robert Williams is doing light basketball work. At least he's bumping guys to some degree. He's playing 1-on-1 versus Ben Simmons 1-on-0. So I think when we're talking injuries and we're talking depth, Celtics are closer to having a Robert Williams back, and the Nets could desperately use Ben Simmons' defense on the perimeter to help out Kyrie or Seth and just sit one of those, or not Kyrie, but to sit Seth Curry down and just to be a body out there. But if he's playing 1-on-0 now, I don't know how you throw him in games 4, 5, or 6. I mean, when the series could be virtually on the line. So I like the Celtics, the fact that they've been playing so well. I'm not so concerned about the Robert Williams injury when you've got Al Horford's experience back there and Daniel Tyson. I mean, it doesn't get much more solid than that. Not as spectacular as Robert Williams, but pretty damn solid. So I'm buying the team that's been playing better for longer, even though I'm sure many of our No Dunks faithful think that I would be taking the Brooklyn Nets. I think it's just a bad matchup for the Nets that they across the board, the Celtics feel good and give the Nets some bad matchups.
What does playing 1-on-0 mean? I've never heard anybody say it. It's just like, you're just shooting around.
Shooting around.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Never That's said, exactly like it. Lee's never said to us, yeah, I went down to the court the other day just to play a little 1-on-0.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
You shot around.
If that's what NBA players are doing, then I'm on an equal with NBA players. Yeah. I'm shooting around by myself almost every day. So well, I know how it feels.
Ejion Leon played 1-on-chair. If you remember back in the day, his draft.
Chair shut him down too. I remember.
Yeah. So
you get more respect playing against literally nobody than playing against a piece of furniture. 1-0 is much more impressive than 1-chair.
So yeah, we'll see if he returns. Like, okay, let's say Leahy even does come back. Ben Simmons is back. Games 4 or 5 in this series, and it's 2-2 or, you know, it's 3-1, whatever it is. We haven't seen him play basketball in almost a year. The last time he played was June 20th in a Sixers uniform, of course, in the Game 7 loss to the Hawks. So, like, who knows what he can even give. And then, you know, let's say you're like, okay, of course, you can get him out there to play defense on a Jalen or a Jason. That's great. He probably can still do that. He's probably pretty elite at that. But he does have to play on the other end. And would the Celtics go to hack a Ben? Would they, like, just try and rattle him? You know, the crowd would be all over him in Boston. It's like, that part's fascinating. Like, just how Udoka and the Celtics would approach to playing him and forcing him into action offensively. And of course, dare him to shoot, but then even put him at the line. I think that's a real possibility.
If I'm Ime Udoka, I'm saying come back, Ben, as quick as you want for exactly that reason. I would say whoever he's defending, let him have as much space as he wants, because, you know, even if you open the lane for him, if someone comes over, he doesn't want to get fouled and go to the free throw line. He doesn't want to have to deal with that in the playoffs. He's obviously not going to shoot. And if the ball's in his hands, then it's not in Kyrie's hands and it's not in Kevin Durant's hands. Until we've seen him play, I think you absolutely say, Ben, you can do whatever you want out there. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing here for the Brooklyn Nets. Their ceiling with Kyrie and Kevin Durant is huge. Both of those guys, as we saw the other night, can be incredible offensive players. But after that, they need someone else like a Seth Curry. I think Seth Curry's been good for them, but he's kind of dealing with an ankle injury here himself.
He did so, nothing in that game.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's not true. He stepped out of bounds a lot of times.
True.
And other than that, you know, it was Bruce Brown who had a good game, and then it's Andre Drummond trying to feast inside, but he doesn't obviously shoot or spread the floor. So they need somebody else to provide the offense. And that's the thing. What do they do? The Nets, it's a little bit like the Joel Embiid Philadelphia 76ers. When Kevin Durant's on the bench, how do they sort of cope in those minutes? We know Kyrie can get red hot, but he's also had some pretty bad shooting games in the games that he played during the regular season. So that's an interesting factor here for the Nets. And also, defensively, I was very impressed with what they did against Cleveland, the effort, you know, blocking shots. Kevin Durant was all over the place. That's one game. You've got to do this now against a much better offensive team in the Boston Celtics, and likely for entire games for 4 or 5, however long this series goes. So I think that's another concern here for the Brooklyn Nets. Sure, Ben Simmons can theoretically help, but a guy hasn't played. I mean, you're going to say you go out there and defend Jason Tatum straight up without playing. You're playing one on none, then you're playing defense on Jason Tatum. So I don't think Ben Simmons, it would be wise for the Nets to bring him back. I really don't think he can help in a positive way for this team. I think he can only be a detriment because he's got no reps with these guys. And I think that's huge. So I really like this for the Boston Celtics. I believe Kevin Durant is the best player in the series. And usually that tilts it towards that team, but not in this case for me, because Boston's at home. They're just way deeper, I think. They're playing so much better in the last, you know, sort of 2 or 3 months here. Ime Udoka's done a fantastic job there with them. And I think as well, as Kyrie was brilliant against the Cavs the other night, well, the Celtics can throw Smart, Derek White, Jaylen Brown on him if they want. And Kyrie's got the ability to get his shot off. We know that. But it's just so much different when it's like, oh, my God, I had Smart for the last 5 possessions. Now I've got long arms Derek White in my face as well. So it's that he's going to have to work so much harder to get his buckets. He can do it, but it's just not going to be easy.
What do you think, Trey? What are your keys to this series, which should be very entertaining?
Well, I like that you mentioned the Sixers-Raptors series, Lee, because it does feel very similar to that series to me. Boston obviously has a lot more depth. They've got a 9-man rotation of everybody that's playing pretty solid, you know, outside of Robert Williams missing however much time he ends up missing. But the Nets have Kevin Durant, and when Kevin Durant's on the court, I assume that the Nets are probably going to win those minutes. Can the Celtics beat the Nets in the course of 8 minutes or even fewer? Like, Kevin Durant loves to play a ton of minutes. He'll play 40 minutes, no problem. He was going 53 in that overtime loss against the Bucks last season. No problem for Kevin Durant, really. So that's a huge question to me, but I do think the Robert Williams injury is massive here. A huge part of the reason the Celtics were able to be the best defense in the league this year is because they figured out how to play with Horford and Williams both out there, with Williams being a big-time help guy and a great switch guy. Like, Horford and Tice are solid, but if you're Kevin Durant, you're licking your chops if it's Daniel Tice out there. And I actually think that Kyrie Irving can probably hide on Daniel Tice. Like, let him be the guy that shoots shots, because He ain't Robert Williams as a passer or a finisher. So I think that that could be a place where you're seeing some guards hide as well. The Celtics love to switch, which forces the Nets into a ton of ISO situations. And they've got maybe the two best isolation players in the league right now.
Yeah,
certainly Kevin Durant, maybe Kyrie Irving, though sometimes with Kyrie, it's a little bit inefficient. It can take him 30 shots to get 30 points. But I think it's going to be just as tough for the Celtics to stop the Nets as it is going to be the other way around. So I think this one is really a coin flip here. It probably comes down to who's better in fourth quarters, Kevin Durant or Jason Tatum. I'm going to go with Durant here. Nets in seven, but I mean, this one should be tight.
Yeah, I saw Schumann again, who does a great job breaking these down for NBA.com. You were talking about the clutch stats, Tass, and Schumann was doing the deep dive on that. You know, Nets obviously pretty decent, especially helps when you have Durant playing and Kyrie. And the Celtics, they just had all these games that they won by 20 points or more, 18 wins by 20 points or more. But in those five-point games, 5 minutes to go, 13 and 22 overall. Only the Pacers were worse, according to Shu. And Tatum shot 2 for 25 on clutch three-pointers. Marcus Smart was really bad on clutch twos. So, yeah, if it's a tight game, And KD's playing, and hell, and of course with Kyrie too, like both of those guys, I'm going to take KD over Tatum every time right now still. Now Tatum this might be the series, Trey, where he's like, you know, he's going to be probably a top five MVP. He's been amazing, incredible. Even if some of those like clutch three-pointers say otherwise, but this could be the series where he's like, no, I'm just there. You know, I'm step in step with like a guy like KD, which is possible and would be incredible to watch, but I'm with Trey that I'm leaning long series, close series. The Ben Simmons factor is fascinating. That's a whole other wrinkle along with the Time Lord, but I'm going Nets in seven with Trey. So it sounds like we're split on this one. Two Beantown boys and two Brooklyn boys. Doesn't have the same ring to it. Is that right? So is that right, Lee? Who are you going? Celtics and
yeah,
how many?
I'm going to tell. I actually think it's going to be done in five. I've been really impressed with the way Boston has. And obviously Kevin Durant is so good, but I am a little concerned that he's just going to play heavy, heavy minutes. And he's been injured this season. And I think part of that was because he was playing heavy minutes. And so if the game's close at the end of late, obviously, I sort of tilt towards Kevin Durant there, but I just think Boston's got too much depth, and I sort of think they're going to get away from Brooklyn pretty early in these ones. So I'm going, pretty much opposite of you guys. I'm going Boston in five games here. I think they're going to do it pretty easily.
Okay. And Tass, where are you going? Beantown and how many?
Yeah, I like Boston at seven. I think the Nets are good enough to ride their big guys and Durant and Kyrie for lots of minutes and get a couple wins in this series. But, you know, when it does come down to the fourth quarter, yeah, of course you side with the best one-on-one scorer in the world in Kevin Durant. But I think the Celtics showed a good enough example of the last few months that they're just going to find the hole in the offense or the defense. And I think the fact that the Nets haven't really had enough reps together as a unit, when it comes to the playoffs, just to be on a string. And I think the Celtics will find the hole. I don't think Tatum is selfish enough to just say, hey, it's my time. If they can find Kyrie, if they can find a smaller guard on Jaylen Brown, they're going to take advantage of that. I think they'll do that. And when it comes down to the fourth quarters, there is literally no one else who can guard Jason Tatum on the Nets roster than Kevin Durant. They've just got huge holes. You can throw a tiny Bruce Brown on him, sure. You can throw Kessler Edwards out there, sure. I think there you might have a dusting of a Blake Griffin or something because they're just such a tiny team without Ben Simmons out there. And that's why I think the Nets would try to throw Ben Simmons out there because Kevin Durant literally has to guard Tatum almost every second he's out there. And at least the Celtics have some options to throw at Durant, even though, you know, Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. So the Celtics depth and their camaraderie, their chemistry, I think is going to show in this Nets series because the Nets have just got it together the last couple weeks even. And I don't think they're that confident in their rotations right now. And they shouldn't be, especially with their bigs coming off the bench. Nick Claxton, I guess, will be big in this series, but I don't know. I'm buying the Celtics depth.
Two more predictions I'll throw out there for this Celtics-Nets series. One, Jaylen Brown is going to have monster games, I think. You were alluding to this, Tass, early just because of matchup problems. I think he might even have like a better overall numbers-wise series, scoring-wise series than Tatum. I would not be shocked by that at all. So that's one. Second one, Trey, you'll like this. because you got the Nets in seven. Isn't this just going to set up for a game seven where Ben Simmons has returned in this series? Game five, six, whatever. There's three, there's 4 minutes left to go in a tight game seven. And there's an opportunity for Ben. He gets the ball in a similar position like he did against the Hawks. And instead of passing it, instead of being a little afraid to go to the line or score, he dunks it. It's just going to be there. I'm telling you, it's like almost like a year to the, not a year to the day, but pretty damn close. So he'll have a big moment. Ben Simmons will score late in the game seven. Everyone will like, oh, he's fixed. He's good.
Big Ben moment, the new Big Ben. He's walking around like he's Jordan out there, Skeet, so you know he'll come up in the clutch. Right. My prediction is that we don't see Ben Simmons.
You don't think he plays?
No, I think this is fake news.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think this is a, hey, don't forget about me kind of news.
We'll see.
No, I think he's going to wait till the finals to play.
I think he's bringing him back in the most high-leverage moments.
I know. It's just like the further it goes along, how is it going to happen?
If he came back, Philadelphia.
Yeah. I mean, if he came back now, if he was a bench guy now, but game four to game six, I mean, that's what?
That's
very confused.
I buy this. I think Ben Simmons is going to return in this series. So I'll go on record saying I think Shams has got this one right, whoever he's talking to there. That's weird. And it could blow up in their face, like you were saying, Lee. And Udoka and the Celtics should be all over him. Mm-hmm. I believe they will. And like really rattle him and again, do the hack of Ben, whatever you got to do. But I think we're going to see Ben Simmons in this series. And it's going to make a series which was already entertaining on paper, like just go to the next level. This is going to be the one that everybody's like going to be talking about like the most, I think, from night to night here mm-hmm. in the first round of the playoffs. It just sort of feels that way just because of like the star power. People still believe the Nets could win the championship. Celtics could very easily win this series, though, and knock them out. Man, so much here. All right. Let's hear from the stream team. Let's hear your predictions, Nets, Celtics. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to set up tonight's play-in games and do like a big picture look at the playoffs. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, back with No Dunks here. Friday drop. We got two games on tonight. TAS, the play-in games. Hawks, Cavs, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Winner faces the Heat in round one. Loser goes fishing. And then the second game tonight, Pelicans in LA to take on the Clippers. 10 p.m. start on TNT. We got the ESPN and the TNT game tonight. Winner faces the Suns on Sunday in game one of that first round series. So my question, Tess, we've already talked a little bit about these games over the week, but which road team you think is more likely to win and become the eighth seed tonight? Is it the Hawks or is it the Pelicans? What do you think?
Well, the Hawks are a favorite on the road in Cleveland, but I'm not buying that. I think both home teams win tonight. I do think that Cleveland getting a little disrespected right now because Jared Allen has been out for so long and maybe because they're just not on people's radar like Trae Young is. So people are putting their money on the Atlanta Hawks, but Jared Allen's supposed to be back tonight. He is supposed to give it a go at the starting center spot, and that is huge. It just kind of puts everybody in their appropriate spots where they have to do less. You had Rook Evan Mobley featured on the first possession of a play-in game. They gave it to him in the post. And that just won't happen with everybody in their proper spots. You know, Lauri Markkanen, Isaac Okoro, asked to do less. Caris LeVert, come off the bench where you are perfect. So I think that will help. I think the fact that they just got blasted 40-20 in that first quarter against the Brooklyn Nets in the play-in game was important. I think they won't let that happen again. It's fresh. And the Hawks, they got it going against the Charlotte Hornets in their play-in game because the Hornets just allowed them so much space and allowed them to get into their flow. They didn't look good in the first quarter or the second quarter. They looked good in the third quarter because the Hornets were really bad defensively. So I think the Cavs absolutely stepped that up. And I think there's just good matchups across the board. Like Danilo Gallinari is going to have to go against a seven-footer, whether it's Lauri Markkanen or Evan Mobley. And Gallinari's not going by anybody. I think he'll be slowed down. I think he is the one of the guys, along with Herter and Trae Young, that are ready for this moment, that are ready to play for the Hawks. But I think he's not going to play as well. I think there's a bunch of matchups across the board, including Isaac Okoro. I think will be asked to do less offensively if Jared Allen is in there. And he should probably start on Trae Young. I think J.B. Bickerstaff would be making a mistake by waiting sort of Doc Rivers style like last year with when the Sixers played the Hawks. If he waits, you know, till the second half even to put a better defender on Trae Young, I think that will hurt. And if you put Isaac Okoro, great defender, their junkyard dog, on Trae Young, I think you can – you know, stay home on everybody else. They won't double like the Charlotte Hornets did. But I also like the Clippers thinking about it a little bit. I think the Clippers against the Pels, sort of a similar thing where the Clippers had some fourth quarter mistakes against the Wolves. Bad defense. Anthony Edwards had a breakaway dunk. I don't think that happens again. I think 2 weeks ago these two teams played, so there's a template for the Clippers. They'll probably do to Jonas Valanciunas what they did to Karl Anthony Towns because they did that a couple of weeks ago. They'll have a small switchy defense. I think their defense will be prepared after being poopy against the Timberwolves late. So I like both home teams. Who the heck knows, though? I think both road teams could easily win these games.
Right. Yeah, okay. Task picking against the Birds. What about you? Yeah, a lot of people in the stream team saying W's for the Birds tonight, the Hawks and the Pelicans. But of the two, which one do you think is more likely?
Well, I do think it is Atlanta, and maybe there's a little bit of home court bias here because we were down there, but that offense was looking pretty good against a nothing defense there from the Hornets. So I think, though, if the Hawks can get out there and get contributions from the guys they got the other night, because Gallinari was good, Hunter was good, Kevin Huerta got him going, because Trae Young didn't have a great game, and he picked it up certainly in the second half, but I think that was really what was important here for Atlanta, is they got other contributions from guys, and if they can get that again tonight, that's where they're going to win this game. I don't think it's going to be a defensive arm wrestle. I think it's going to be a bit of a sort of up and down, you know, run and gun type of game, and I think that does suit Atlanta. I think they have an advantage in that spot, so I like them. They got to feel confident. Tass mentioned their favorite. You know, the Pelicans, for example, are 4-point underdogs in Los Angeles, which is a bit of a surprise, to be honest with me. I thought there'd be a little bit of a tighter line there. But I think the Cavs are just a bit more vulnerable, mainly because I expect a much better performance from the Clippers, especially down the stretch. Remember, they led by 10 points 9 minutes to go in that game. Mm-hmm. And I think Ty Lue, when Karl Anthony Towns fat out, maybe they just took their foot off the gas and they just thought, oh, we've got this game, you know, and they made a mistake, really, and the Wolves pounced on it. And now it is win or go home. So I think the Clippers are going to be a little bit tougher at home in front of their fans, knowing their season's on the line. Having said that, I was super impressed with the Pelicans. I love the way that CJ led that team, especially in the second quarter and the first half. I thought Ingram was brilliant. And Valanciunas, if he can be huge and if he can dominate Zubats, I think that does help the Pels. And then they've got defensive player of the year, Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado. You know, he's going to do something out there. He's going to find his way into this game. So I think it could be a double road sweep. You know, that wouldn't surprise me. I think, you know, both road teams have got to feel pretty good.
Trey, where are you going?
Birds of a feather flock together, Lee. Maybe that's why both of the bird teams could pull off the road upsets. I'm kind of a half bird man at this point. I do think the Hawks can get to a higher level with their team currently than the Cavs can, but the Cavs are getting the emotional boost of having a home court game here. They're also getting Jared Allen back, and Tass is right that the defensive upgrade from the Hornets to the Cavaliers, that's going to be a little bit of a wake-up call for the Atlanta Hawks, but they seem to tap into a little bit of playoff intensity for that game against the Hornets. They came in and just blew them out in the third quarter, making the right play and just making the right play over and over again, getting good performances from basically all of their role players. I do think that they're going to still need to get good performances from their role players. If the Cavs make it just a Trae Young show, then I think that's obviously worse for the Cavs because Gallinari points, Herter points, Bogdanovich points. If these guys are hitting threes, they're a really tough team to beat. As for the Clippers, I just think the Clippers are actually a pretty solid team. They just blew it in the fourth quarter, which is something that we've seen happen before. But I think they'll have the requisite intensity to get into the actual playoffs here. They just need a good game from Paul George. He had a really good quarter in their first play-in game against the Timberwolves. I think he had 17 in a quarter, and then he had 17 in the other three quarters, which is fine, but the shooting percentages weren't great. I think he'll be able to have a little bit better game against the Pelicans here. So I think the Hawks are more likely to pull the upset. I'm going to pick the Hawks, and I'm also going to pick the Clippers as well.
I'm Team Bird tonight on a Friday night. I think both are going to win, both road teams, actually. I'm back in Atlanta in Cleveland, and I like the Pelicans against the Clippers. You guys all made great points against LA, but I just love McCollum and Brandon Ingram shot-making right now. Valanciunas is going to do work inside again. Like they're going to try and front and throw doubles at him, but that's a big, burly man, and I think he can handle it a little bit better in the sense than as we saw sort of Cat get very flustered. I don't think that's going to happen with JV. So yeah, I'll take both road teams to get in there. And a part of that I think is maybe I guess I'd prefer to see those teams in their matchups against the number one seeds in both conferences. Not that they're going to win. I wouldn't pick any of these four teams to beat either, of course, the Heat or the Suns, but I just think it might be more enjoyable to have the Hawks in there and go down to the Fortress and see a game. So to have them take on Miami. And I just think it'd be fun to see the Pels give it a go against the Suns. Maybe win one game at most, but the Clippers, they don't do a lot for me. I don't find them to be all that much of an enjoyable watch. So I'm Team Birds tonight, but let's hear from everybody. Okay. We knew that was coming. Yeah. Apologized.
You throw a mouth guard and it hits somebody, you're getting a fine. Just smash it. Just spike it on the court. I know he was intending to hit hit a heckler, so respect to that, but you better have lightning accuracy. Even Steph Curry, when he chucked his mouth guard, he hit a fan. These things are like fan magnets. If it comes out of your mouth, it's hitting somebody.
Yeah. Do you ever think somebody will throw a mouthpiece and it will go into somebody else's mouth?
It would have to be twins. Like one Morris twin gets pissed, chucks his mouth guard, shows over the guy's mouth.
Yeah. We also had Patrick Beverley get fined $30,000 for inappropriate language. Yeah, that's what the NBA said on Thursday. Inappropriate statements, I guess, was their exact terminology there.
For his IG Live?
Well, egregious use of profanity in a media interview and social media post following the game. What he said in the post-game press conference, I don't think that's really what got him the fine here. I mean, he was just basically saying, like, I told them to take their ass home is what he's saying about the clip. Okay, that's fine. But then, yes, he had an Instagram post. It's been deleted since, where he's calling them the weak-ass Clippers and telling them to get the F out of here and maybe – I guess going a little too far for the NBA's liking. So 30K lighter there, Beverly's pockets. What do you think, Trey?
I guess it had been a while since Patrick Beverley caught a fine, so it was about time.
No, didn't he get fined like a day before?
That's a long time. It's a long time for Patrick Beverley. 24 to 48 hours. I don't know. Beverley. He's making a million off this play-in championship win here. You know, between the celebrating, showing up on ESPN for his next day interviews wearing like a Versace robe, he's on top of the world right now. So $30,000, it's I guess totally worth it to him.
I think Bud Light wanted to get him his own beer can too.
That's a punishment in itself, isn't it?
Oh boy, here we go. Here comes the beer snob. All right, so there's that. And then this is probably the most important news of the bunch. Steph Curry, according to Kendra Andrews, he's participated in the Warriors scrimmage there on Thursday, and the team is feeling optimistic he's going to be available for game one on Saturday. He's been out since March 16th with a sprained ligament in his left foot. So, Trey, thoughts on Curry possibly playing in game one? What do you think?
I think he's going to play. He also told Draymond on his podcast – Steph did that he's very optimistic he's going to play. So pretty solid source as well there. I think he's going to be effective just because it's Steph Curry. If he's out there running around, he has gravity. If he's a catch and shoot player, he obviously has gravity and he'll still be able to shoot. But I still think the Warriors probably benefit by letting Jordan Poole be the Steph Curry a lot during game one, just so that they can kind of manage Curry's foot and see how it responds to playing in an actual competitive basketball game. It also gives the Warriors a chance to kind of unlock that lineup with Steph, Clay, Poole, Draymond, and player to be named later, build confidence, because that's been a solid lineup for the Warriors this season. They just haven't been able to run it out there for a while. So I think that that's the smart move. Bring Steph Curry back. Let him be 95% of what you're expecting from Steph Curry, knowing that you've got MVP Steph waiting as soon as he's able to shake off the rust and prove that he's good to go for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, Tass, any thoughts here on Curry being optimistic that he goes on in the first game here on the weekend?
He's ready to roll, man. He's playing 4-on-0, I think, out there. Watching the footage, he is actually sprinting around. He's doing more than Ben Simmons. The timeline was, if he had to have played even earlier this week, it sure looked like he could have in terms of the timeline when he actually was injured. So I do think he goes. And, yeah, number one, he always plays off the ball. Number two, now they've got Jordan Poole carrying the offense a lot, being the point guard a lot, and with Draymond to lean on. Yeah, Steph can play off the ball even more so. And so that's just another weapon. It's scary times. It kind of just changes things. It changes the equation for the Nuggets a little bit, because it's something that they haven't seen if Steph plays even more so off the ball. So it's I'm sure the Warriors, you know, may take a little bit to get going with this new offense, but they're pumped to have this sort of different iteration of their team with Jordan Poole being such a huge part of it, along with Clay, Steph, Draymond.
Back to the Beverly news there, Lee. Sam P here in the stream team saying Bud Light should have a Bud Lee can. What do you think about that, Lee?
Yeah, I could use it to piss into it. That'd be great.
That's what the Bud Lee can is? Your Bud Lee.
Yeah. Yeah,
I hope it's not a tall boy. I wouldn't want this Lee piss to go dry.
I still think you drink that can before you drink a can of Bud Light. It was funny when I was leaving Aruba Airport. There was, you know, a big group of tourists in front of us and these American guys, and someone said, "Hey, great news. What? They got Bud Light in the bar." I'm like, "That's great news. You're in Aruba, man. You want to drink Bud Light? Why do you want to drink Bud Light anyway? But you're in Aruba. Drink something else." But that was some bros, you know. That was some high fives out there, man. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that, but this is pumped for their Bud Light. Okay, let's get to some questions about the weekend here. We got 8 games on this weekend. It's going to be crazy. Game one for every series on Saturday and Sunday. So the first question I had, Lee, and this is for everybody in the stream team, everybody listening to the podcast later, just which game one are you most excited for and why? Break it down.
The Raptors-Sixers series, I think, is going to be so spicy. Pardon the pun. Or include, that's a good pun, isn't it, really, on Spicy P. I just really think this one could have massive reverberations around the Philadelphia 76ers franchise. They're the favorite. They're the home court. They've got Joel Embiid, the best individual player in the series. And as we've talked about this week, in games this season against the Raptors, when he's played, the minutes he's been on the court, the Sixers have won, but they haven't really been able to win the minutes without him. And I just think that is going to be huge in this series, because if you're Nick Nurse, you know, they're going to throw multiple looks at him, and you know Embiid's going to go for his 30, 35, whatever, but he's just not the sort of guy I can see playing 45, 46 minutes, especially if this is a long series. He's probably going to tap out at around 38, 39 minutes, which leaves the Sixers very, very vulnerable for 8, 9, possibly 10 minutes per game. And then you're relying on guys like James Harden, who hasn't really shown he's got that pep in his step so far in his time since coming over 2 months ago in the trade. And then you've got guys like Tobias Harris, another guy doesn't really step up in the playoffs. He has his moments here and there, but are you relying on him to get you those crucial minutes while Joel Embiid sits down? Tyrese Maxey's been very, very good for them. Matisse Thybulle's also an X factor in this series, because if he has a positive impact in these first two games, let's say he defends Pascal Siakam and shuts him down, he can't play in Toronto. And how big of a factor could that potentially be here for Philadelphia if Matisse Thybulle can't play in 3 out of 7 games? If it goes that far, they might miss him. Maybe they don't. Maybe Doc Rivers said after the last game when they lost to the Raptors, Matisse Iba wouldn't have made any impact. So maybe he doesn't. Who knows there? But also, speaking
that's
of
how you Doc build Rivers, confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like
we don't need this guy. He sucks anyways.
We don't need our best perimeter defender.
But that's also brings me to Doc Rivers, because Doc Rivers is someone who has very questionable playoff sort of closeouts. You know, coaching his team, he's led the league in most 3-1 blown. He took a lot of heat after what happened to them against the Atlanta Hawks last season. So I think this one is ripe here for the Raptors. I love them. I've talked about how I think the Raptors can devour them, win in five. I probably tried to walk that back a little bit, but now I'm in and I'm going chips in the table. I say the Raptors do win this. And I think especially what could happen here, the Sixers, I think, are the team that most likely to implode of any playoff team right now, because if they drop game one, and let's say game one is a bit of a disaster, you know, a comfortable Raptors victory, you know the Sixers fans are going to be very nervous and they're going to get on their own team. And that we've already seen this season. Tobias Harris has had a little bit there with the crowd, and the fans are just not going to be patient with this team. They're going to expect James Harden to step up immediately. They're going to expect everybody to contribute outside of Joel Embiid, who you know is going to do it. So this is a fascinating series. I picked the Raptors in five. I'm sticking with it, but it could be very, very juicy, this one.
Okay, so he's taking the nurse over the doc.
Yes.
I like that. Nurses run the hospital. Everybody knows that. Tass, what series are you most excited for and why?
Raptors in five. You're insane, man. That is crazy. The Sixers are going to implode that bad. Can't wait, though. That's going to be fun. Listen, it's playoff basketball time, and I'm just ready. I'm ready for game one, Mavs Jazz, even though Luka Doncic will not be playing in game one. I'm just ready for playoff basketball. And I believe in the Mavs continuity over the Jazz lack of continuity. I think the Jazz just not all that mentally tough. They don't fight back if they get down big. Last time I checked, they're 4-22 when they go down double digits. That's the worst mark of any team still playing. That's a John Schumann stat for you. And things get tougher in the playoffs. So are you going to get mentally tougher come postseason? I doubt it. I think the Mavs win the series no matter how many games Luka plays when it comes down to it. They got to get him back at some point for sure. But I'm ready. One Eastern. Mavs, Jazz, then we got a Grizz, Wolves. I thought, you know, it's just a great start to the postseason. But looking at that one Eastern start time, you know, kind of screwing with both those teams. That's pretty freaking early. Jazz, that's 11 a.m. local time, 12 for the Dallas Mavericks. That is early. Yeah. You know, at 12, I think Spencer Dinwiddie is going to have a good series if Luka plays or not. But 12, that's early. He'll have just finished his delicious breakfast sandwich from Eggs Lut, as we saw him eat once. I mean, that's early.
How many times do you have to bring this up?
Forever.
I love it.
Forever.
I do love it. I both want to moan at it every time, but I also smile inside every time. Okay, so Tass is pumped for the first one. I love that answer. Trey, which series are you really, really excited for this weekend?
I'm a sicko, Skeetsy. I'm like Tass. I'm excited for all of them. Laura keeps asking me about making plans for this weekend. She'll be like, you want to go bowling with Katie and Parker Saturday? I'm like, yeah. No. No, it's the playoffs. I mean, it's the playoffs. Do you want to go bowling? Go for it. Throw some strikes down. So I ranked my top six right now because we don't know the last two.
Yeah.
Number one, homer pick, Bucks versus Bulls. This is probably everybody's least anticipated series,
yes.
If I'm being quite honest, but it's been 5 years, so I'm excited, so shut up. Number two, Sixers-Raptors. Number three, Celtics-Nets. This feels like I saw somebody in the stream team earlier compare it to Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen in the AFC game last year. That was a classic where it felt like a couple of championship contenders going head-to-head a little too early, so I like that one. Grizzlies-Timberwolves, I've got at the four slot. Mavs Jazz at number five, only going down because of the Luka injury. And then Warriors Nuggets is my least anticipated first round series so far, just because this kind of feels like a wait till next year series or a wait till last year series, where it felt like the Nuggets had a chance up until Jamal Murray getting injured. Again, I think it was actually against the Warriors. We don't know exactly what the Warriors are going to look like now. So it just kind of feels like a holding series to me, but it's awesome, man. First weekend of the playoffs. It's our NCAA tournament. You're watching basketball 13 hours straight. It's good stuff.
Yeah, the only thing I hate about this play-in tournament, I've just realized, is we're still waiting to find out who the hell the last teams are in the actual playoffs. and it's Friday night and the playoffs start this weekend. So it sucks for us, Tass, in the programming of our show. It's like, we're not going to be on record here on the podcast, at least, with our 1-8 breakdown and predictions. I mean, I'm sure we'll all jump on Twitter and share who we think's going to win and how many games, but it's like, it's like right up against it, you know? And I guess that's the disadvantage of being in the play. And it's like, all right, now you got to turn around and play the best team in each conference. But it's sort of weird when you think about it. We don't even know the full playoff bracket yet.
I thought they would get it done on Thursday night and give us a day here, but I guess not. Forcing these two teams to go into their Sunday lineup because they're not going to play on back-to-backs.
Right.
But I figured that the NBA wants to schedule their 1-8 on a Saturday, potentially. They want their schedule the way they want it, so I thought it'd be done on Thursday. I don't know. I'm not in the scheduling department, but maybe they'll give me a call next year. I think they should. They should end it on a Thursday.
Okay.
What about the flip side, Skeets? Do you buy that it is a disadvantage for the first seeds to not know their playoff opponent until 2 days before?
I mean, I don't see how it couldn't be a small disadvantage to not really know who you're playing. But then it's like they're the number one seed. They're playing teams that are like, in some cases, 10 games below 500. So it's like, I'm sure they're like, we don't give a damn who we're playing. Like, let's just go. But yeah, a little bit. I find that part a little strange. So
yeah, I agree. I think in the Suns' case, they don't care. Like, it doesn't matter who the Suns are going to play. But I mean, if the Heat get the Hawks, like the Hawks are a team that went to the conference finals last year, you know, and they got to play against the Heat got to play against them. That's a solid team. Maybe it more so matters when the bottom of the conference is actually good.
Yeah. It's just more work for their like scouting departments and stuff like that. And like game planning, they have to like get ready for multiple teams instead of just like focusing in on one. But again, I don't think it's really truly going to matter. I think both number one seeds will win their series no matter who they're playing. But yeah, it is weird. That's why I've come around on the idea. I know Ziller's a big fan of it. Like picking your opponent, like, where you finish there, you're the first seed, you get to pick who you want and stuff like that, but maybe down the line. All right, one more question here with the playoffs. Fun one for everyone. Role player to watch for this weekend, okay? You know, the Stars, yeah, they're going to probably ball out, but like, get into the nitty-gritty if you really want, TK. Who's just like someone that could surprise you? A little crystal ball here. Monday morning, we could be talking about X as this like crazy performance from this role player. Who you got?
I don't know if you consider these guys role players, but Tass mentioned Luka Doncic expected to miss game one against the Jazz there per Shams Charania. So I'm watching Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson because the Mavs are still going to play small. So I consider them, you know, I mean, they're probably going to be the stars for the Mavericks as long as Luka's out. But they're role players in a general sense. Mavs, they're going to play small ball. They're going to try and stretch out the Jazz. They're going to shoot a whole bunch of threes. But then you still need somebody to get to the rim. They still need distributing the ball to the shooters. And it would be nice if somebody can kind of replace Luka's 8 free throw attempts a game. The good news for the Mavs, they've played pretty well with Dinwiddie and Brunson on the court and Doncic off the court. Both of those guys can take on a little bit more responsibility. Dinwiddie has thrived in those situations. Brunson a little less so, but they're still winning those minutes pretty convincingly. But it's only been about 200 minutes total, and they're going to be going against the Jazz, a really solid defensive team in the playoffs when things are slow. And both Dinwiddie and Brunson have kind of struggled in the pick and roll against Utah. So this is a little bit of a blessing for the Jazz because I think game one is absolutely massive in this series. The Jazz have to win this series, or it feels like this end of the era of the Jazz is over. The Luka injury kind of evens the playing field, I think, here, but it sounds ridiculous. And only knowing for sure that Luka's going to miss one game, is game one a must win for the Jazz?
Oh,
I kind of think it
absolutely
is. I'm like, they have to get one of the first two, and they know that there's going to be no Doncic, so they've got their best opportunity right away. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
For 11 a.m. local time on the road, too, right? Like, they're going to be thrown off, no doubt about it. It's going to be a weird start time, but they should win that game. The Jazz should. We'll see if Dinwiddie and Brunson are able to put something together because they both have to be pretty good to approximate what they do on any given night, plus what they're replacing with Luka.
Okay, I like that. That's fine. Definitely, you know, role players in this sense. I'm just like, I just want to avoid like the superstars and the All-NBA guys. So Tass, who do you have? Who's somebody that might surprise us all this weekend?
I'm going slightly deep. I'm going to the Bucks-Bulls series, and I'm going with my Wesley Matthews. You guys are taking turns being homers.
Trey excited for the Bulls, obviously. Lee picking the Hawks and their 16-25 road record because he wants to go see a game. I get it. Well, I'm cheering for Wesley Matthews because he's become their starter in Milwaukee as their starting shooting guard. And steal the show as a role player, that's a little bit strong. I doubt Wesley Matthews is going to steal the show. But, you know, if they go on to the NBA Finals, if they go on to win this thing, he's going to be like their Deshaun Stevenson that won a title with the Mavs in 2011. He's going to be there playing 24 minutes a game. Of all the teams that are left in the postseason, the Bulls have the worst opponent three-point percentage, and that's what Wesley's going to line up. And, you know, he missed the Bucks championship last season, although he was a Buck the previous season. So I'm in his corner. He could get hot. He could have a 15-point night. He could have a 17-point night.
Yeah.
He could have a 19-point night. But he also shares those minutes with – he's not going for 20. He's not going for 20. Let's pull it down.
Yeah. An odd number too, yeah.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, the 17 or 19. He'd have to hit a two or go to the line. Good math there. But he also shares time with Grayson Allen. Pat Connaughton is back. So – This is his time to shine, though, against a team that against the Bulls that just allows three pointers. He can do it. He can do it. And since I've you know played some of the hits with my eggs LUT comment from Spencer Dinwiddie, let me show this old photo of myself and Wesley Matthews, two young kids, my boy Wes. As we met in an airport and chatted for a bit. Look at those headphones he's got.
That's not Pat Ellis. That's Max Strus. all right. Wesley Matthews, role player to watch for in the Bucks-Bulls game one this weekend. What about you, Lee?
Well, while we're sticking with homers, why not go with Patty Mills there in Brooklyn? Because honestly, they are going to need someone Brooklyn to sort of help out a bit. And you know, we know Kyrie and Kevin Durant are going to take the bulk of the heavy lifting on the offensive end. But Patty Mills is a good playoff performer, and he also stepped up for Australia at the Olympics last year. Had 42 points in the bronze medal game. So, you know, Patty knows how to deliver. But also, because Seth Curry, you know, I think Seth Curry's obviously a better player, but his injury history is a bit of a concern there. And Patty is going to step up in the moment, I think. So I'd like to see him have a good game. Not too good a game, especially when you pick the Celtics in five. You don't want to see them lose that first game and have them have to douchebag it from there. So, yeah. I do think because he started off incredibly well there in Brooklyn, his second half of the season wasn't as good. He looked like he was actually slowing down a little bit, maybe a little bit fatigued from so much basketball. He's 33 years old now, but I do believe Patty is a big-time performer. He hasn't been to the playoffs since 2019 with the Spurs. But again, this is an opportunity where there's going to be shots. They're going to need someone else to knock them down. And Patty's going to be coming around off those screens and he's going to get plenty of opportunity. So hopefully he can deliver.
Okay. I'll double down on my Malik Beasley pick to the guy that could have a dominant game one. Malik Threesley there for the Wolves. Going to be important that they can stretch the floor and knock him down. Simple as that. We'll see if he can have an awesome game and maybe they can – yeah, pull off the quote-unquote upset, that game one against the Grizzlies, and then, by God, we'd be in for one hell of a series if that does happen. So that's where I'll go. Let's hear from everybody in the stream team. We're going to take one more break when we come back. Tweet of the night and rapid fire. Don't go anywhere.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/NoDunks.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, back with No Dunks. Before we get to Tweet of the Night, the question is, Lee, will you have a Bud Light this weekend while you watch some of the NBA playoff games?
I want to enjoy it.
No. Ben Simmons quote board. Okay, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
JD, Tweet of the Night, what do you got, man?
Yeah, man, I got Tweet of the Night, and it's actually comes from our good friend Jason Concepcion, who I always go to. When I have Tweet of the Night, there's Gourmet Spud, and then right after that, there's Jason Concepcion, Network with a Three. He's always got the goods. He's always got his finger on the pulse, and really what it is he's bringing to my attention and the world's attention a new account. I don't know if you guys know this. Yeah. It's called, he basically says, best account on the app, and it's a retweet of chaotic nightclub photos. Now, wow. This is my bag, baby. I love this stuff, and I went deep, and it's relatively new. I think they only have about 40 tweets, 39 or 40 tweets.
Okay.
I mean, and it took me a minute to figure out what was going on in this picture, because to be fair, there's some distractions. And apologies to our audio listeners. You got to go to YouTube to check this out, or just go to the website. But look at the woman underneath. It's just great. And this account has all sorts of just gold, like this guy. It's just a middle-aged man who decided to take his shirt off at the nightclub. As
he had a
do.
Sweater underneath. Yeah,
yeah, and he's a very hairy, a hirsute gentleman, if you will.
Kind of like our friend Tim Harrison.
What's that, Taz?
Yeah, he looks like Tim Harrison. Slightly.
That is this insult to that.
No, yeah, it is. It is, Tim. I have apologies to Tim.
Wow. And now it also includes, you know, bar mishaps where you take a picture with
your mate. Oh, that's a good one.
I've done this to people and I've had it done to me. It's just, you put your arm around a guy, you got your neck, your hand around the neck of the bottle, and it just pours straight
that
down.
That looks like Photoshop.
I know, it's good. Crazy.
Both of those faces look like you use the Make Your Face Look Like a Baby app.
Mm-hmm. This has got to be in Europe because these boys are way too young to be in that. Yeah.
It looks like a strap on a bag, that beer stream. It doesn't look real. What a perfect stream.
Too perfect.
That's pretty great. So we've got drinking mishaps. We've got dancing mishaps. I actually fear for this woman's safety.
That's amazing.
Whoa!
But I just love the outfit is great. Just watching her try to get up after this in those heels, hilarious, I think. But I hope she's okay.
Oh, wow. Now, I hadn't noticed the heels yet.
Right?
Oh, goodness. Oh, my goodness.
So then there's shenanigan picture. Now, they have a lot of these where there's a woman in the foreground here. She's got lipstick on, but also all over her face. And then the guy behind her, yeah. Same shade of lipstick smeared all over. And hopefully the guy next to her isn't her boyfriend.
Oh, that is good.
I worked in a nightclub in Greece, and I've seen all of this, all of it. And, you know, A night at a nightclub is not complete without some barf. Now, I didn't want to show a barf picture, but I have to show this one because it's goddamn beautiful. Look at this.
It's so good.
It's amazing. It's like one of my favorite euphemisms for throwing up. You know, you've heard throwing, you know, driving the porcelain bus. You've heard of ralphing. One of my favorite terms for that is whistling beef. This guy is whistling beef.
JD, we just did all this work to get our YouTube subscribers up, and now we just lost them all in one photo. One whistling beef got rid of all of them.
Whistling.
And I love the girls in the background who are loving every second of it. Wow. So good. Anyways, shout out to Jason Concepcion for introducing me to my favorite new Twitter account, Chaotic Nightclub Photos.
It's good. It's good. Lee, I assume you have a chaotic nightclub photo of your own. I thought you were searching for, and we would have ready to go in your minutes. But,
I am working on it as we speak, actually.
hey, Dickie. Hey, Dad. Where's the photo of me taking a dump on the dance floor when I was 18?
Yeah, no. Let me see if I can bring it up here. It's similar to there to JD's first one. This is actually in Bongo Bongos in Miami. That's my that gentleman there is Big Darren, and then the gentleman in the white is my brother Tim, and they're like best friends, those two. And even Tim, who's seen everything with Darren across multiple continents, he's kind of like, wow, I've never seen this before from Big Darren.
Jesus, that guy's freaking huge.
Yeah, okay, he's 18 eggs a day.
Yeah, that's
wow. Shout out to Big Plug. But good friends with the Gulch too, Big Plug.
That was good. Yeah.
Comes round circle, full circle.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's wrap up this Drop podcast with a little rapid fire fun. Lee's got the questions. Trey, Tass, and JD have the answers.
Yes, I do. First one here. This week, Netflix announced that it's adding a new 2 thumbs up rating option to offer better recommendations for their shows. What's an emoji you would like to add to just your everyday life, Trey?
It was the middle of January and the Bulls were on top of the world. First place in the Eastern Conference. Story of the NBA. And that's when I told Laura, if they win a championship, I'm getting the eyes and the red circle tattooed on my lower back. So I would be happy to do it. But it's feeling like my back is going to stay a virgin back. That's what it's feeling like at this point. But I would do it. I'll follow through. I'll get a see red tattoo right there.
Hey, can we remix it right now? Would you do it if they just beat the Bucks in the first round?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yes. Yes. Okay. I just became the biggest Bulls fan.
Tass.
The emoji I'd want to add to my life. Well, I think on a practical sense, like I'd want a "you sure" emoji, like a what, you know, like a sort of an eyebrow up, like a rock emoji. Whenever I'm making a choice, like whenever I need to do something, I want that to pop up when I'm thinking about this question. Huh? Got to add an emoji to my life? Yeah, one of those. I guess they do have the one eyebrow up emoji, but it doesn't do enough for me.
I like this guy. I like the.
Thinking
man.
Yeah.
I love that.
JD.
Yeah, mine is hurry up. Like when I spend a lot of time waiting for my kids in the car or whatever, or just waiting for them to, you know, come downstairs or whatever. And it's, I need this. Like I need some kind of, come on, let's go. Like not the clapping emoji, but the back of the hand, like let's get going. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I can't find it. Yeah. Well, we use a lot of GIFs around here. Emojis just don't do it. They don't cut it, you know?
Yeah. Okay, question 2. On Tuesday night, Patrick Beverley celebrated the Timberwolves' win over the Clippers by jumping up on the scorer table, taking his jersey off, throwing it into the crowd, stomping around on the court for several minutes after the game. But All the win meant was a first-round matchup against the number 2 seed Memphis Grizzlies, who were favorites to win that series. So when was a time you excessively celebrated a relatively minor success, Trey?
Performing Timberwolves of Minnesota. Got it done, first take, thought it was great, liked every comment, retweeted every comment, hearts, no dunks approves. And I listened to it back. And the first verse was very good. And it sounded better in studio, I think, probably because the guitar was overwhelming the backing track and you couldn't hear the fact that on the third and fourth verses, I came in an entire measure early and then played it too fast. But other than that, it was perfect.
It looked good. There was a part when you were doing it, and like, yeah, we're hearing it in our ears, the backing track. And I'm like, is he hearing something different? Like, as it went on, it was so far off.
It was so far off. I was hearing it, but I wasn't at, like, I was hearing that it was happening, and I was like, this seems like the beat and the tempo. So I'm going to go with it. I'm not going to stop and start over. Like, we're just going to ride it out here. So if the Wolves go to the NBA Finals, we'll record a proper version, actual backing track. Maybe a full music video. We can get all of the Doyle boys to learn various instruments and put on a full performance here.
And right. Maybe get a tattoo as well. You can get another tattoo.
Sure. Why not?
I'm so glad. I had a perfect experience then because I turned down my headphones entirely. So I didn't hear the backtracking at all because we had some feedback bouncing around from somewhere. So I just turned mine down. So I'm so glad that happened because I thought it was perfect. Yeah. Live, the guitar was perfect.
When was the time you overly celebrated a relatively minor success?
Well, you guys remember what we were given right when we got to NBA TV. It was that half Canadian, half American flag in that huge frame. The frame weighed like a billion pounds. I got our man, Mike Kaplan, to go into our office and pull it out and give it to me. And I finally hung it up this week, found a couple studs, and put that thing up. You know, it was pretty easy when it came down to it, but I'm not much of a hanger, so it got up. I celebrated, and as a fan of ours who is a vexillologist, vexillology, the study of flags. If you remember, a few months ago, he saw a photo of it. And he said, vexillologically speaking, because there's so many L's in there. He said, vexillologically speaking, that thing is beautiful. And I entirely agreed. Danielle didn't want me to put it up. She said, where are you going to put it in our house? You're not going to put a double flag in our house. Well, I put it outside. I salute it just like Trey does his bull flag. No, I put it in the garage, in the gym. Okay. Perfect gym. Perfect gym equipment.
That's a good gym flag.
It's why wouldn't you put it in your house? Your wife's American. You're Canadian. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's flag, a weird. Is it flags, weird? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of, I guess. But anyways, it's vexillologically speaking, it's very nice. So I had to put it up.
Nice.
JD, when was the time you celebrated a relatively minor success?
Well, it's not me. It was over my Mexican vacation. It was a family affair, and my brother and his wife and my nephew was there, who's four, and my kids, Lincoln and Jackson, who are Lincoln almost 16 and Jackson just turned 14. They were playing basketball together on a mini hoop, basically. And Harrison, four, on offense against Lincoln and Jackson, who were on defense. And it was basically like the Monstars versus Tweety, right? So, you know, Harrison taking the ball, traveling all the way, but they let it go. They let that go. He tried to dunk the ball in the mini hoop, and Lincoln just bats it out of his hand. And they were both like, and they're pure, they're huge now. Lincoln 6'2".
Wow.
You know, like Lincoln in your face. You know, both of them like flexing. And it was just by the pool.
To
like,
a
just
4-year-old.
To a 4-year-old, yeah. And you know, he did not take it very well. It was there were some tears, and then they felt bad, and they were like, "Should I apologize?" Like, yeah, maybe, but you know, it's fine. It's, you know, if he's gonna play with the big boys, he's gonna get better.
There you go.
That's how you get better. So, so everybody was fine, but it was a bit much. Lee, so that's what came to mind when you posed this question.
Okay, last question here. Sticking with Patrick Beverley, because at the post-game press conference after Tuesday's game, he continued to talk about how much the game meant to him because he was on the Clippers last season and he felt like he was treated badly by the organization after he said he gave blood, sweat, and tears to them. Okay, guys, let's get dirty. Let's get nasty. When was the time you got revenge on somebody, Trey?
Back in college, there was a big rivalry between the basketball bros and the football bros. And we met up in the semifinals of our wiffle ball intramural championship. We'd had a lot of drama during the football season because a lot of us basketball bros did work for the school paper. Our football team was like one of the worst football teams in the nation, like losing by 60 points on the regular. So their star was pretty pissed, especially at like our second baseman. He's like, "You guys are a bunch of weasels." I'll never forget he called us weasels. It was one of the funniest things. We met up in the semifinals. This guy is on the mound pitching to Mike Schmidt, not the baseball player.
Not the legend?
Yeah, not the legend, just this dude. He winds up, gets ready to throw the pitch, says, "Game over." Throws the pitch. Schmidt hits it. There's errors all around. Pat Murphy scores from first. We take the win, and we're just talking shit. Oh, who's the weasels now, Kevin? Who's the weasels now? So we went to the finals, and we smashed the younger baseball bros. Had two wins in the championship series. Hit two dingers, and then we over celebrated Patrick Beverley style. Wow. I remember just like eating nachos in bed. That was the big celebration. Was like at the end of the night, we just had a bunch of nachos laying around. We're doing our bunk talk. eating nachos in bed. Oh, good times, good times.
I'm so glad I asked. That's great.
Bunch of weasels. That was an awesome insult. That's a funny way.
Sassy, when did you get revenge?
That's funny you bring up late night eats, Trey, because Danielle always says I'm really good at eating our little kids' snacks. They're special foods that nobody's supposed to touch. Well, Wednesday, we went to the basketball game. I didn't have any dinner, so I was home. I was hungry when I got home, so I went into their stash, and I showed her. I ate all of their little jingle jangle snack from Trader Joe's. So am I just proving her point? I guess. But at the same time, I showed her, I don't care. I don't care if you tell me
I paid for this,
that I eat their snacks. I love that jingle jangle snacks. I was surprised how much I ate, but I was starving. I should have gone like Lee, and I guess, I don't know if the rest of you guys did. There were some freebies, there was some popcorn, there was some a grill down there. Yeah. What a mistake. I made a mistake and I just ended up eating sugar. Did I pay for it the next day? You betcha.
Wait, is it actually called Jingle Jangles or are you just making that up? Because they got weird names, I know.
Yeah, I think it might be, but I'm not 100% certain. It comes in a yellow bag. I think it might be. It's a nice chocolate mix right now. Perfect.
Nice. Okay, JD, tell us about a time you got revenge.
Yeah, so getting back to kids, one day when Jackson was four, this is back when he was four, he casually walked by me in his underwear, lifted his leg, and farted at me. You guys don't know me as a big farter here in the Classic Factory or in the office, but I never forgot that. And about a week later, I tricked him. I basically lifted up the back of my shorts and said, "Is there something on my thigh? You know, like on the back of my thigh?
Check for a mole or something?"
Yeah. Like, it feels like there's something there. And he put his face was right up my ass. And I had the best fart. Like, just, it was the chef's kiss of farts. And I just let it rip. Oh, man. He was so mad. And I basically turned around to him and I said, "Now we're in a fart war, and we've been in the war. This war has been going on for 10 years, so it continues."
Wow.
Yeah, he is. It's a big-time performer. He doesn't fart often. When he does, you remember him.
It's starts a war when he does. Yeah. Okay, he's not going around farting.
All right. Fart in the van in Vegas.
Now we're in a fart war. Yeah. Incredible.
I would never fart in a van in Vegas.
I don't think you're the suspect in that one.
Oh, boy.
No, okay. It's a cold case.
I don't know. It's a warm case, really.
Yeah, it's a hot case. It's a hot one. That van was hot.
All right, we got to call it there, guys. Nice to get a little beef whistling and farts in at the end, though. It's always great. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok at No Dunks Inc. And get yourself an athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks. If you want some No Dunks merch, go to nodunks.com. I know we teased some jerseys, some Grizzlies and Nuggets, No Dunks variations on some sweet jerseys. Don't worry, those are coming. We'll keep you posted on those. But everybody have a great weekend. Again, happy Passover, happy Easter, happy Aster if you celebrate that, and happy NBA playoff weekend. Enjoy the games. We'll be back on Monday, hopefully back in the Classic Factory to break down a majority of these series. Will we get to all of them? I don't know. I'm sure we'll upset some people by not talking long enough about a particular series, but we'll do our best to recap what's going to be a very, very busy weekend. So everybody have fun, enjoy the games, and we will see you on Monday. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, we want to hear your predictions for the playoff series. So I've got a link here in the stream team, if you're watching on YouTube, to one of the polls, because I didn't know how to link the actual community tab where we've got all polls for all the playoff series. The Celtics and Nets one is the one that's featured, but go vote on all of them. What do you think the leader in the Celtics versus Nets poll is? Celtics in how many? Because it's not the Nets.
Oh, wow. We got a lot of Beantown boys. Celtics in six.
Six, I think, would be
popular. Six is 32%. Seven is 23%, which is tied with the Nets in six. Nets in seven at 17%. And Lee, his pick, Celtics in five. Is that right, Lee? You said
that's
Celtics
correct.
6%. Only 6%.
Six minority people out there.
There it is.
Go on and vote.
Go vote, people. We'll see you on Monday. Embrace the weekend.
You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.